Insightful podcasts by informative hosts. Insights into Things, a podcast network.
Welcome to Insights into Entertainment, a podcast series taking a deeper look into entertainment and media. Your hosts, Joseph and Michelle Whalen, a husband and wife team of pop culture fanatics, are exploring all things from music and movies to television and fandom.
Welcome to Insights into Entertainment. This is episode 38, A Marvelous Proposal. I'm your host, Joseph Whalen, and I will read the script here. My totally awesome and wonderful co-host, Michelle Whalen.
Wow, you did that so well.
That is a script that I did not actually write myself, just for the record. So how you doing today, sweetheart?
I am doing wonderful. How are you, my love?
I'd be doing great if I put my monitors up and I didn't beforehand. So
slacker.
Yeah, we're
all
okay.
All that prep work and everything.
And you know what? Not everyone's perfect.
But then there's me. And
there's always room for improvement.
Always is.
So we've got a good show lined up today. But before we get into that, I did have a rant that I had to get on.
And I'm just going to sit back and let him go.
I'm not even going to include this in the Disney Detective segment. So we'll talk about it anyway. So last week we did our typical Disney Detective segment where we talked about various Disney news, and one of the articles that we talked about was a movie preview.
Actually, I believe the movie preview was part of the regular entertainment. I don't think
I don't think it really matters, though.
Anyway,
case.
I'll let you continue.
You were
continue.
Just going to sit back, right? Let me do this.
Okay, I'm sitting back.
So the preview that we had shown without sound, which we had commented over, was for the Jungle Cruise. And, you know, we did our post production edits and got all the finalized video and audio done and everything. And we posted it up to YouTube and promptly received a takedown notice or a block notice that we were posting copyrighted material. And this came from Disney Enterprises. And it was because we showed video of their movie trailer, which, so for the record, this podcast, we don't monetize this podcast. We don't make any money off of this. This is not a for-profit operation. This is purely for the love of entertainment and for, you know, the sake of our viewers to keep them entertained and informed. So
if you want to give us money,
well, okay.
No, I'm kidding.
So Disney gave us a takedown notice on this, which it seems kind of strange because it's a movie preview.
Right.
So it's material that they've produced themselves, they've released to the public themselves. And it's material that its sole purpose is to generate revenue for Disney.
Right. We're helping to promote this new movie.
Exactly. So at what point in time would you not want to have that distribution? I mean, granted, we don't have a huge, you know, following. We've got on our Twitch channel right now, we've got less than 200 followers on our Twitch channel. So we're not, it's not hugely impactful.
Right.
But it's not detrimental either. Mm-hmm. At no point in time could it be detrimental to have your movie preview that's an advertisement run somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we wound up getting this block notice globally. It wasn't even nationwide. It was across the entire market spectrum of YouTube. And it forced me to go back in, re-edit the video, take the video out and keep the audio in, and put a little editorial in for, you know, why we had to cut the video out of there. And I just wanted to express my disappointment at Disney for having the lack of foresight to allow something like that to happen on a small podcast like this, where it's not damaging to the company and ultimately beneficial to the company. And I just wanted to point out, this is typical of Disney's strong arm tactics of stepping on the little people, you know, not understanding the context in which, because it was an automated system that caught it. And it clearly shows Disney lacks the insight, well, you know, to coin our own phrase, they lack the insight into how the material was being used to objectively regulate their own advertising.
And it wasn't even like it was like the full movie, because there are people that post full-length movies or full episodes of television shows on YouTube.
Well, in fact, it wasn't even the full trailer.
Right, and that...
It was literally only a portion of the trailer.
Right, and that's kind of like, okay, if you're just doing a trailer, something that's a commercial, something that, you know, you're putting out there to draw people to come in, why would you block that from anybody using it?
Right, so we are disputing it under fair use copyright, fair use copyright laws. We think we were well within our right because we were adding context to the material. We were not altering their material in any way. We were omitting portions of it so that it wasn't used in its entirety. And we'll see where it goes.
Okay.
But from henceforth, we will not be showing any Disney trailers. We will not be giving Disney any free advertising. You know, we will report on the stories as they are reported in the media. We will comment on it. And you will probably see a lot more of me bashing Disney moving forward from here on out. Not that I didn't really hold back before.
Really?
But, you know, I will now go out of my way to find the stories that reflect the negativity of Disney rather than the positive aspects of Disney, because I think there's a pretty good balance of it out there. So, anyway, rant over. Are we ready to get into our Disney detective?
Sure.
Let's see how we can bash Disney now. Go for Disney detective.
I hate to tell you, but there's no bashing today.
I know.
So the first story we're going to talk about is, if you've ever dreamed about putting on armor and fighting alongside the Avengers, your day has come, as long as you have like $40. So Avengers Damage Control is the latest virtual reality experience that the Void locations will be offering. If you've ever gone down to Disney or in Disney World or Disneyland in Disney Springs area, they have this virtual reality I don't want to say store. It's not a store. Well, it's
like a gaming.
Yeah, a gaming experience. That's what it is. Called The Void. Previously, they've done a Star Wars experience that was Star Wars Secrets of the Empire. They had Ralph Breaks the VR, which was based off of Wreck-It Ralph. And now they have Damage Control, which is, from what they were saying, that this one will actually run between 18 and 20 minutes, which most of the other previous virtual reality experiences were usually shorter time frames. So this is their longest one. So the telling of the story, basically you're introduced to Black Panther's sister, who is devising a new suit based off of her brother's uniform and then Iron Man's tech from Stark Industries. And you're basically going through and fighting a bunch of people. But what's kind of cool is they also have different effects where, like, you feel wind and heat and a smell. Somebody had said that, you know, you get a whiff of popcorn, as an example, as one point, you know, through the experience. The video will actually feature several actors from the Marvel Universe and also some of their voices as well, because I guess some of it...
Yeah, I was kind of impressed that they were able to pull in Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, and Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd, yeah.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool. While it's, you know, it remains, you know, expensive in, you know, regards to if you just went to the movies, tickets cost about $40.
But again,
for the experience.
That is for like a 20-minute experience.
Right, right. So that's...
And it's an fully interactive experience,
right,
which is really cool.
Right.
You put you in a room with your gear on as a backpack and a helmet. And,
right, right.
You know,
so
you have to fight through it, and it's paced based on your playthrough. So
right.
You have to walk through the scenario and do all the different
right.
things in there.
Right. So we've never done it because I think the last time we had been down in Disney, it hadn't opened yet because it's relatively new in Disney Springs. But the void locations are, they obviously have it in Anaheim, which is, you know, the Disneyland location where their Disney Springs area is, and then obviously in Orlando as well. And it's suggested for kids 10 and up.
I'm curious how heavy the equipment is if you're strapping a backpack on. So clearly the computing power is in the backpack with some battery power and the headset. So some of the current consumer grade VR stuff can get pretty heavy.
Oh yeah,
and uncomfortable to be.
Yeah, just
in.
Even putting, you know, like on your face, not necessarily anything else. So and it actually did open just yesterday, according to the article.
Nice, cool. Next up.
So, media site review.org said that it is seeking the biggest, baddest Disney fans to watch 30 of their favorite Disney movies and TV shows on Disney Plus streaming service for the first 30 days after the platform launches, and you could make $1,000 for it. Candidates are expected to watch these movies and shows right down to the credits and then submit a review to, of the new streaming platform. Applicants are required to list two of their top social media platforms and the number of followers that they have. I'm guessing with our, you know, 200 followers, we probably wouldn't.
But don't I qualify as one of the baddest Disney fans?
Right. You do, actually, probably. And you must be 18 years old. Or older and a U.S. citizen. The application is actually available on review.org, which is a digital publication that offers reviews on technology devices and in-home services. The applications are actually still being accepted up until November 7th. And the publication is not being sponsored by Disney or any of their companies.
So we
companies.
Can actually talk about this without us Freddie getting taken
yes,
down.
Yes, exactly. So along with $1,000, five select Disney fanatics will get a one-year subscription to Disney Plus and a Disney-themed movie-watching kit, which includes a blanket, cups, popcorn popper, and popcorn kernels. Obviously, the launch of the streaming service is expected to be a major milestone for Disney. As we've been talking about for a while now, you know, Disney Plus will be launching later next month, and it's going to be the home of all things Disney. You were even telling me, you know, one of my favorite, you know, Disney movies from when I was a kid, The Cat from Outer Space, is even going to be, you know, one of the movies available. So basically anything, you know, Disney has made, Pixar, Star Wars, Marvel, and, you know, all the new content as well will be there.
So that should be interesting. 30 hours of streaming over 30 days, though, right?
30 movies.
30 movies.
Over 30 days.
Over 30
so
days.
So one movie a day. That's really not.
Which isn't tough at all. I mean, because remember they did a similar, there was, I don't know
yeah,
if this
wasn't
it was the
something.
Same
kind yeah.
of for Avengers.
Right.
So it was
because
stream
it was all
of these
the movies,
movies
in with, order or something or in
yeah,
order
with
the timeline.
Yeah, with the exception of like the Hulk movies because nobody,
they were really,
nobody
yeah.
requires you to watch Hulk movies.
Especially the ones before.
That
you
cutting,
know?
Cutting dialogue, Hulk smash. It's real deep. But, yeah, it was similar to that, but that one was you had to do it over, like, a weekend.
Right, right. It was, like,
which is like
30 hours straight or something.
Keep your eyes open, you know,
don't
ears
nap.
Bleeding. Yeah, yeah, so.
No bathroom breaks.
This was a little bit more forgiving. And,
right.
You know, $1,000, you know.
Yeah, not bad.
Even I would watch Disney movies for $1,000.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so. That
maybe we'll have
something.
To put a clip together or something.
We might have.
Yeah, because we do have some.
I think we should just do the application just to see.
Just to see what it looks
involved.
Like. Yeah,
yeah,
maybe we'll do that. We'll let you know if we do it.
Yeah. And we have the title article for today's show next. Right? Let's talk about
that. So Brie Larson's reaction to this marriage proposal will make your day. You actually found this article on BuzzFeed. And for our listeners who aren't viewing this, you have to go to BuzzFeed and look up this article, because the photos, I don't know if we're going to be able to do it justice, because it's really a visual thing. So at the Ace Comic Con in Chicago, there were pictures that were taken when two fans met Brie Larson during a photo shoot. So the two men are John and Richard, and John told BuzzFeed that he had handed a letter to Brie that explained why it was so special for him to propose in front of her. And the pictures, again, if you're watching, our YouTube or our live stream, you can see, you know, just her reaction is just awesome. How, you know, she was like, oh my God, you know, and crying and everything. He also shared that he and Richard have been overwhelmed by the response. What a special moment for my husband and me to be with our favorite hero is being embraced by the world, and it just feels so amazing. It was clearly so special to Brie with her expression that's basically like, oh my God, this is really happening. And even after the couple kissed, she kind of peeked out from behind them, still completely, you know, in shock that, you know, she was there for this. And afterwards, she actually tweeted and gave her love to the newly engaged couple. So just a really sweet, you know.
You know, as much as I am often down on Disney, I do try to find, you know, the feel-good stories mm-hmm. once in a while. And when I saw this one was just, it was too cute just to see her reaction. Mm-hmm. But not just the visual reaction, the response that she had about how this was a life-changing experience for mm-hmm. her to see it, it was cute. It was mm-hmm. cute, and I have to imagine, considering the number of likes and retweets and
mm-hmm. right.
the response that it had an impact on other people, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice that she was such a good sport about mm-hmm. it, that she agreed to, you know, participate in it, and you know, I think it had a lasting effect on a lot of people. So kudos to Brie for taking her. There's a shot of her.
Yeah, there's a shot of her peeking out. Going, oh my God, funny. That's so cute.
So yeah. I thought that was a great story to end our Disney Detective on this week.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of offsets my rant a little bit, but you know, I'm not going to be bitter about that.
No, never.
So that is it for Disney Detective this week. We have some entertainment news coming up next. So tell us about our entertainment news this week.
So Martin Scorsese is doubled down on his beliefs that today's movies are still like amusement parks. So we had talked about it the other week with Samuel L. Jackson basically coming forward and defending, you know, the Marvel movies and everything, because Martin Scorsese a couple, you know, weeks before had made comments about, you know, the Marvel movies and superhero movies in general and kind of bashing them. And now Martin has decided to come back, you know, again,
because he has nothing to enough people off
right.
The
he
first
didn't.
Time.
He didn't upset everybody. You know, so basically, he came forward again and said that Marvel movies are just not cinema. And so, per the Hollywood Reporter, you know, his comments were made at the BFI London Film Fest, where his latest movie, a star-studded mafia film.
Oh,
which seems
geez,
to be
Scorsese making a mafia film. That
right,
never happens.
Right. And, he repeated his beliefs that comic book movies, which have become one of the only genres that Hollywood studios still regularly crank out, is destroying the mid-budget films made by the likes of Scorsese himself, are a plague. It's not cinema. It's something else, Scorsese said. We shouldn't be invaded by it. We need cinemas to step up and show films that are narrative films. Basically, he had compared, you know, the Marvel and DC films to theme parks. And then he doubled down on that, saying that theaters have become amusement parks and they're all fine and good, but don't invade everything else in that sense. He did offer an olive branch, saying that implied that he'd been listening to some other people, such as Guardian of the Galaxy's maven James Gunn, who tried to clap back at him, but with respect, saying they're fine and good for those who enjoy that type of film. By the way, knowing that what goes into them, I admire them for what they do. It's just not my thing. It simply is not. It's creating another kind of audience that thinks cinema is that.
Right, because, you know, we need to get rid of these feel-good superhero shows that show us how the underdogs can win and, you know, fight for what you believe in.
Right.
And replace it with more of the mafia glorified cutthroat criminal movies, because that's right. Much more wholesome, right?
Right, right. But what was kind of funny is Scorsese's controversial statements about superhero movies is kind of funny, because while the number one movie in the world right now is Joker, which is a gritty standalone origins film that's, you know, heavily embedded in two of the director's most beloved films. It's kind of like Taxi Driver, also like a little bit like Kings of Comedy, and actually features Robert De Niro in a key supporting role, who is obviously in almost every
Scorsese
film. So it was kind of like, oh yeah? You know.
You know, this is a case, just like with Spielberg standing up and complaining and moaning about Netflix, you know, and streaming services nominated for Academy Awards.
Right.
This is a clear-cut case of old Hollywood being threatened by
the new.
What is new.
Mm-hmm. No, I
and,
see that.
You know, it would be smart to be less critical of what's new and be more supportive and embrace it and accept what's new, because the times change. Guess what, Martin Scorsese? We don't do silent films anymore either, okay? I hate to break it to you. Oh, and the majority of our films, they happen to be in color now, too.
I was just going to say that. Darn, you beat me to it.
You know, the industry changes, and if you don't change with it, you're going to be left behind.
You're
going to
be left behind.
You're going to be Charlie Chaplin left behind in the silent black and white film.
Oh,
days.
And wait a second. Your movie came out in certain theaters, but you're streaming it on Netflix.
Right.
Right. So you're kind of.
Let's be less hypocritical and a little bit more open-minded.
Yeah,
there's absolutely nothing wrong with superhero films.
Yeah.
Now that they can make them, you know, I mean, we were stuck with some real stinkers for a while there.
Mm-hmm.
Now the technology has caught up to it that they can do it.
Right. And do it so well that, you know.
Like Avengers Endgame was not, it was not wrapped in special effects. It wasn't the special effects wasn't what people went for. It was the story.
The story. Absolutely.
And it was, to his point, the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that you can take, I don't know, what was it, 23 films over the course of 10 years, 23 individual films with different characters, different lead characters, build them up over the course of 10 years, and then finalize it and bring them all together in a single movie.
Yeah.
That in itself is a work of art.
Mm-hmm.
Scorsese's not even come close to that, making the same mafia movie over and over again, every time with the same actors. All they do is change the color of their suits.
Right.
So.
And the cars.
Right.
Their cars.
Right.
Change.
The cars get better.
Right.
But.
Yeah.
You know what? You need to go back to your origins and realize that the stuff that you do now is the same stuff that you were doing 30 and 40 years ago. You need to get with the times.
Yep.
So, good director, but kind of pigeonholes himself, and this commentary that he has proves that point.
Yep.
So let's talk Star Wars.
So J.J. Abrams said that Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, strives to give a cohesive ending to all 9 movies. He said, endings are the things that scare me the most. He said when...
especially when they have to follow up that stinker that Rian Johnson put out.
Right. And obviously he co-wrote and will be directing this last one. So after all, he has, you know, arguably never been, there's never been a film tasked with wrapping up more stories that span a longer cinematic period than Skywalker. The film not only finishes Abrams' Disney-produced trilogy that launched in 2015 with The Force Awakens, but obviously George Lucas's six previous episodes that began in 1977 with A New Hope. So that's 42 years of blockbuster sci-fi adventures that somehow have to conclude in one movie.
But not shut the genre down because right. Disney's not done milking it.
Absolutely. Moo. We need, like, cow sound effects for that. This is about bringing this thing to a close in a way that is emotional and meaningful and also satisfying in terms of actually answering as many questions as possible. He said that so in years from now, someone watching these movies, all nine of them, they're watching a story that is as cohesive as possible. He said while there were things that were planned for and discussed, George Lucas himself said that he created this, that he actually saw it as three-act plays. And it doesn't mean that there isn't discovery. It doesn't mean that there aren't things that, you know, come up and make you go, oh, here's another opportunity. He said it also doesn't mean that there's a list of payoffs that we do because of the setups. But we're also very much aware of this, and that the end of the trilogy, it also needs to be very satisfying. We went into this thinking, knowing that it has to have an ending, and we're not going to screw around. So, hopefully, again, with everything that happened in Last Jedi, they're, you know, fixing all of that, and then just bringing, you know, a good close to the whole story.
Well, I get a kick out of the fact that he talks about, you know, what Lucas's original idea was. Mm-hmm. You can't really go down that path and talk about what Lucas's original idea was when Disney acquires
right
the entire franchises and basically throws everything that Lucas had out the window and doesn't even want him involved, because Lucas gave him a treatment for Force Awakens.
Right.
And they're like, eh, no thanks. We'll do it ourselves.
Right.
You know, and they did. And Force Awakens was a, you know, one for the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And then you let Rian Johnson come in and ruin the entire franchise with that debacle of what he came out with.
Right, right.
So now I can certainly understand his apprehension to having to end the series itself, because he has the weight of wrapping up nine movies over a 40-year time span. But that's overshadowed by having to clean up the mess that Rian Johnson made.
Right.
So you're going to have to spend a large portion of the movie cleaning up all the stuff that he screwed up, then bringing an entire saga to a close.
Or if it's kind of like what, you know, happened with Last Jedi when, you know, Rey handed the lightsaber to Luke and he just went,
right.
You know, where half of her journey was, you know, getting it to him. Maybe there's going to be that quick little fix or something. You know, maybe it won't be long in the movie.
But he screwed up so many things in that movie.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
You're going to have to take at least a third to a half of the movie fixing those things if you want to put this train back on the rails.
Well, hopefully it'll happen.
And like I said, you can't, you're not ending a franchise.
Right.
You're ending
the saga of
ending
Skywalker.
A storyline here.
Right, right.
But you have to do it in such a way as to open up the door to the stuff that's coming down the road.
Right.
Like, I don't expect them to set up the next series here, but you can't. You're dealing with things in the Star Wars universe that affect the entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
You look at stuff like The Mandalorian, okay? So The Mandalorian is an offshoot. It's a tertiary story that the stuff that happened in The Mandalorian, assuming you don't go and kill a head of state as an assassin, what you do doesn't affect the grand scheme of things. But when you're talking about, you know, in the Star Wars Skywalker saga, you're talking about things that are affecting the entire galactic structure. So, like, you can't end this and not change everything else.
Mm.
And the closest parallel that I have to this is when they tried to get Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to sort of follow the storyline of Avengers.
Okay.
Okay. So you would see when Avengers came out, there was some spillover into right. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then you got to the point where S.H.I.E.L.D. falls.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that has a dramatic impact, but you didn't have S.H.I.E.L.D. like feeding back into Avengers. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those things where if you end the universe, you know,
in everything else will fall.
Exactly.
Right.
So it's like you have to kind of have that animosity moving forward. You have to have those plot twists going forward. And mm-hmm. if you resolve everything, you know, you kind of ruin the rest of the franchise unless everything
understand.
That you do is you're gonna keep going back and doing origin movies.
Right.
Because we saw how well that went with Solo, right?
I want to be a pilot.
I want to look like Solo.
That was probably our favorite meme.
Because it was like every other line that I want to be a pilot. I'm a pilot. I want to be a pilot.
I'm best pilot.
Anyway, please, JJ, save the franchise. That's all I have to say on this one.
And if you don't already know, Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker opens December 20th.
All right, that is all we had for our insightful picks.
No.
No, that was not. That was all we had for entertainment news. We're going to move on to our insightful picks. And to you, my dear.
So I'm going with something kind of different, but something, you know, away from the television, movie, entertainment, more an entertainment to go and enjoy with your family. One of the fall festivities that we like to do every year or so, or every other year, is a local farm called Shady Brook Farms that is located in Yardley, Pennsylvania. So not too far away from us, not too far away from the Philadelphia area if you're in the surrounding area. And they do different seasonal activities. During the Christmas holiday season, they have a drive-through light exhibit that you can go through. There's fruit picking throughout, you know, the summer seasons. And then during the fall, they have a fall fest. Fall fest includes apple fest and pumpkin fest. And then there's
they do a lot of fests.
They do. It's kind of
mega fest.
And then they actually do their scary horror fest, which is done at night. So what Fall Fest is you pay a flat fee to enter, and they have various different attractions and things to do. So they have wagon rides that will take you out to the apple orchards and the pumpkin patch. And the apples, it depends on what time of the season there are. We actually happened to go last weekend, and there were still a bunch of apples. But I know we've gone other years where it was kind of later in the season, and the apples weren't around. But there's always pumpkins available. Then they have a little playground area. They also have these giant jumping pillows for the kids to jump on. They also
not a bounce house. They're literally pillows that are in the
giant
ground.
Pillow, but they do have bounce houses for the smaller kids. They have a sports challenge area, a corn maze, which this year you actually joined us and cheated, but we we lasted a lot longer in the corn maze this time than before. Which is kind of nice, is during the day they have two of their quote unquote horror attractions that they do for kids. So basically you're still walking through the haunted house, but the lights are on and
no one's home.
Basically there's no actors to scare you. It's just the gory props that are there, but nothing's moving or anything.
They do whisper sometimes.
Yes, that was kind of freaky. The one area is like, hello, are you there?
What are you doing?
Yeah, that was kind of freaky.
Hello. Is it me you're looking for?
So they have two of them set up during the day. They have the Barnhouse of Terror Junior, and then they also have an Alien Invasion of Junior. So again,
which is
3D. It is kind of cool. So even though the lights are still kind of on, it is, you know, kind of freaky. But then at night they do have two other attractions.
Except for that point, you walked into the wall.
Yeah, I did.
Make a left at the end of the really dark hall.
That was kind of funny. But at night, again, they do...
It comes to life.
They have two other attractions that are available. They have a little go-kart section. They have barnyard animals. They have a hail bay obstacle course.
They do pig racing.
They do have a nice little obstacle course now that's set up, but you have to be 52 inches or under. And unfortunately, our daughter is taller than that, so she was a little bummed that she wasn't able to do that.
You can shoot paintballs.
I was going to say, then for an extra fee, so basically it's one cost to get in for all of that, but then they do have extra things. So they have paintball guns, tomato cannons.
Tomato cannons, monster trucks.
They have monster trucks.
Sunday.
They do pony rides. They do have food. There are refreshments of all kinds, even the adult beverage kind. And there's live music on the weekend. They usually have,
The kind of drinks with the little umbrellas.
Right. Yeah. Makes the parents very happy.
Right.
Apple cider donuts, kettle corn, you know, your traditional.
The best damn kettle corn.
No, best darn.
Oh, is it darn?
Yeah, it was darn. Yeah, it was darn.
Okay.
So you could definitely, you know, and it's funny because we always say, like when we leave the parking lot is so incredibly full, but because it's spread out over such a large area, you never feel like you're on top of anybody.
Right.
You know, now we've never gone for the horror side of it, so I don't know, you know, how long the lines are for other things. You know, the biggest line that we had was waiting for the wagon to go do the apple picking and the pumpkin patch picking, but it really wasn't that long. But right, as we were leaving, we did notice that the line did get a little bit longer for
but
that.
But they run that round trip all day long. It's
right.
Not
it's a constant thing. You know, I think they stop running the wagons at 5 o'clock, basically, once it gets dark. Same thing with the two haunted houses. The kids' version, they shut it down at 5 o'clock because they need to get it ready for, you know, the evening.
They got to pile all the zombies in.
Right. Yeah. But once you're in, you're in. So if you want it, you know, especially if you go on the weekend, if you wanted to stay, you know, because at night they start doing like bonfires.
So you get there at like 3, you can do the kid friendly version.
Right. And then stick around for the adult one. So
cool. Good pick. We had a good time there.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So I'm going to dig out a golden oldie for my pick this week. This actually happened to be one that I stumbled across on Netflix. It's a series, it's a 6-part series that was produced for PBS. It was actually one of the most popular PBS shows of all time from what I've read. And it is Joseph Campbell and the Power of Myth. And if you don't know who Joseph Campbell is, Joseph Campbell was an American professor of literature at Sarah Lawrence College, who worked in comparative mythology and comparative religion. His most well-known book is The Hero with a Thousand Faces, which was published in 1949, in which he discusses his theory of the journey of the archetypical hero shared by world mythologies, which he termed the monomyth. Now, the reason that that's significant is that Joseph Campbell has had a huge influence on a number of authors and movie producers and story writers, one of which happens to be George Lucas.
Oh, okay.
George Lucas attributed much of Campbell's work to influencing him in the Star Wars saga.
Okay.
Luke Skywalker epitomizes the hero archetype that Joseph Campbell defines. And Joseph Campbell's definition of this hero archetype is one that spans across literature for thousands of years.
Okay.
From, you know, Greek mythology to Indian mythology to various cultures. So Joseph Campbell was very well known in the literature circles and fictional writing circles. And this series itself was a series of interviews that he did over a course of a couple of weeks with journalist Bill Moyer. And it was published shortly after his death. Joseph Campbell passed away in October of 1987.
Okay.
And it's done almost like a series of college lectures.
Okay.
Where Moyer poses questions to him based on his works, and you get a very deep and detailed understanding of the historical and cultural background on myth and the various – each episode goes into a different aspect of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never read Joseph Campbell. I was aware of him based on the influence he had on Lucas. And in watching this series, you really understand the impact. And Lucas even makes an appearance in the series at one point in time, talking about the influence, because he had actually met and knew Joseph Campbell. But the series itself, it's not... It's a documentary, but it's not a typical Ken Burns-style documentary. It's a, like I said, a lecture series, basically. So if you're interested in fictional writing, if you're interested in mythology, this is really something that you probably want to spend a couple of hours and sit down and watch, because it's incredibly educational and incredibly insightful, and it really makes you understand where the minds of people like George Lucas and other storytellers are when it comes to how they come up with their stories and come up with their ideas and how they flow the stories. And, you know, we talked during the entertainment segment about J.J. Abrams and how Lucas had envisioned, you know, three-part trilogies. And it's a formula that comes out of the work that Joseph Campbell had, you know. And this is work that, and these aren't his original ideas.
Right.
It was basically Joseph Campbell going back and looking at literary history, even Shakespearean plays, and seeing this recurring pattern over and over. And it was a pattern that came out of different cultures that didn't really have contact with each other. So there was a common baseline of how these stories came about and how the human mind thinks. And there is a very deep psychological angle to the entire thing. And at the end of the series, you kind of see how he sums everything up. And things tend to make a lot more sense, you know, why things are done, what order they're done in, what the motivations of characters are. So if you're someone who's interested in creative writing, I think this is an absolute must watch, because it really it teaches you how to tell a story. And it's a story that's been told, a formula for stories that's been told for thousands of years of human history. Fascinating man to listen to, and just a great learning experience for me.
Good pick.
Joseph Campbell and the Power of Myth, streaming on Netflix now. And I think that was all that we had this week. Dear, do we have any afterthoughts?
I don't think so.
No? All right. Well, I think that will do it for us this week. Don't forget to reach out to us. You can email us at comments@insightsintothings.com. You can get us on Twitter
at @insights_things.
In YouTube, we're at www.youtube.com/insightsintothings. On our new website
at www.insightsintothings.com.
You can get our audio podcast at podcast.insightsintoentertainment.com or on Facebook at
facebook.com/insightsintothingspodcast.
And I think that's it. Another one in the books.
Another one done.
We're out of here.
Have a good one, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.